Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Good Wednesday afternoon. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show. My name is not, in fact, Paul Feinbaum. It is Braden Gall. You can get to me on Twitter, at Braden Gall, here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, 855-242-7285. No ruling so far from the ACC officially on whether or not we will be getting rid of divisions in that conference. I think divisions are absolutely not long for this college football world, but we'll get to more of your phone calls on why we should keep them, why we should get rid of them. We'll do more of that in just a few minutes. Bob Herrig, of course, the author of the new book, Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry, joining us here on the program. Bob, welcome to the Paul Feinbaum Show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thanks. Appreciate you having me.
Of course. You wrote a piece last night for SI. It's up on the website now. We'll post it all over the Twitters. Essentially, the PGA Tour has sort of given the stiff arm, the old Heisman Trophy, to everyone who is attempting to play in this new Saudi Arabian Golf League around the world. What do people need to know about sort of the dynamics at play in this decision by the PGA Tour to say, no, you guys can't go play in London in this new LIV Tour?
Yeah, well, it's not that they can't go play, but if they do go play, they will face some sort of penalty from the tour. And what that is, we don't know. And typically the way it works is if a PGA Tour member wants what they call a conflicting event release, and, you know, there is a PGA Tour event scheduled the same week, the Canadian Open, it's the week before the U.S. Open. If a player wants to play in an overseas event that conflicts with the tour event, they have to essentially ask for permission or a release, which is what this is. And a number of guys have done that in this case. And typically the tour would grant it, especially overseas. They don't do it domestically. They don't do it in North America, but they would over there. But in this case, they said no, and it's because they viewed the LIV Golf enterprise as a threat. I mean, it's not just a one-off event. It's not just one European tour event, which is what they would typically grant you a release for. It's a series of tournaments that they want to grow into a regular tour in 2 years. And those plans have been put on hold, by the way. You know, they had originally hoped to do it this year. Now they're gunning for 2024. And obviously there's been a ton of discussion around this. There's been a lot of back and forth, a lot of controversy. Phil Mickelson at the front of it. He hasn't been playing for the last couple of months because of it. So, you know, the tour sort of put its foot down, and now it'll be interesting to see, you know, who crosses over and does it anyway, and what kind of repercussions they might face.
Bob Herrig joining us here, of course, the author of the book Tiger and Phil, the Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry. And Bob, it's like I'm a huge foreign policy nerd, which is not something you normally hear in a sentence on the Paul Feinbaum Show. but there's probably a lot of fans of golf that don't care about the Saudis, you know, MBS and his sovereign wealth fund and the war in Yemen and journalists from the Washington Post and, got, you know, who knows exactly how many Saudis were involved in 9/11. Like, we can go on and on down the list of what this country has sort of been questionable behavior, guilty of, whatever you want to call it. But the PGA Tour right now, as far as I can see it, they have the financial motivation and the moral motivation are aligned right now. And is that kind of what they're looking at? Is they can kind of package those two things together and say, look, we have the moral high ground and the financial high ground. We need to play hardball here.
Yeah, well, certainly when it comes to the financial part of it, the LIV Golf Investments is a huge threat. I mean, the PIF, as it's called, the Public Investment Fund, which is the Saudi wealth fund, you know, is believed to have $500 billion. I mean, it's enormous. And that's why these purses are so big and why it's such a lure. I mean, some of the numbers they were talking about with, you know, bringing players on board, you know, nine-figure guarantees just to sign up. You know, even for them, it's life-changing money. So from that standpoint, sure, the tour has its own interest to protect. You know, they need to make sure that they can provide good fields for their network TV partners who pay them a lot of money and the title sponsors who pay them a lot of money. You know, AT&T is the title sponsor this week in Dallas at the Byron Nelson tournament. You know, they expect to have a good field of players that you and I and golf fans are going to want to watch on TV and the people want to show up to watch in person. And if they can't guarantee that, then the money that they pay in theory would go down. Now, when you get to the moral part of it, that's where I think it gets a little tricky, you know, because look, let's be honest, and I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying that the tour does business in China. Obviously, they have human rights issues that are well, yep, well known and reported. Now, the tour before COVID had a developmental tour over there. It was called PGA Tour China. It was meant to grow the game. I mean, it was for a good cause. You know, it was meant to try to expose the game to Chinese golfers or Asian golfers. You didn't have to just be from China to play it as a sort of a way to get to the PGA Tour someday. That has been hung up because of COVID and the restrictions. There's a world golf event in China called the HSBC Champions. You know, the tours of sanctions it. They're a partner in it. So, you know, I think you have to be careful when you go down the moral road. I mean, there's conflicts throughout sports, let's be honest. And, yep, you know, I think they'd be wise to not beat their chest about that too much, even though it might be a very, very legitimate reason for doing so. Their ultimate reason is to protect their product. And I think they have solid ground there if they feel that this could hurt them. And obviously anybody would, I think, in that situation.
Bob Herrick joining us here on the Paul Finebaum Show. Braden Gall in for Paul on ESPN Radio. What has Phil Mickelson been doing, and what's the end game for him? Like, he obviously kind of stepped in it a little bit with his comments about all of this. What's the next step for Phil Mickelson?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, you know, I've been wrong on this the whole time. I never thought that Phil would skip the Masters. You know, I mean, step back a year ago. Phil won the PGA Championship at Kiowa, became the oldest major champion ever at age 50. That was a record that stood for 53 years. The previous oldest was 48, Julius Boros, in 1968. And since that time, nobody older than 48 had won a major, and Phil did that. And he beat Brooks Koepka, who, you know, major warriors, got four majors, and Louis Oosthuizen. You know, those guys are a lot younger than Phil. And he beat him on a really tough golf course and played beautifully. And really, it should have been his crowning achievement. I mean, it's something he could have lived the rest of his years off of. And yet, here we are a year later. He, a three-time Masters champion, didn't play the Masters. We don't know here 5 days from tournament week if he's going to play the PGA Championship, where he would be defending. He hasn't played since February 6th. That was the last round of, coincidentally, the Saudi international event that, you know, he got appearance money to go play in, as did a lot of guys. And, you know, as you said, he stepped in it, the comments, he's retreated. And I don't know what the end game is. I think the easy way out for Phil is to just completely pledge allegiance to the PGA Tour, say he was sorry for what he said, you know, say that he made a mistake in trying to align himself with the Saudi golf initiative here. And you know, I think people will forgive him. But I'm not so sure it's that easy, because Phil's one of the guys who requested a release to the first LIV event outside of London next month. While he entered the PGA and the U.S. Open, procedural moves he had to make to play in them, he also requested a release. So, like, that to me suggests he's not turning his back on that. And there's all sorts of rumblings about that he might have signed a deal with them early on. I mean, I think the sad thing for Phil is he was not the only one that was ready to take the leap. There were a bunch of players who, if they hadn't signed, they were ready to sign. Or if they did sign and accepted money, have paid it back. And they retreated. And Phil's sort of left out there on an island, you know. But he's not the only one that was looking at this. you know, say what you want about the PGA Tour and all the great things that it does, and it does. It's a phenomenal place to make a living if you're a great player. But the LIV Golf Tour thing had a lot of people interested in it.
Bob, always a pleasure, my friend. I'm assuming, because Phil gets forgiven pretty quickly in his life, and I think we're a pretty forgiving collection of sports fans here in America. And I think if he just like said, "Hey, listen, I'm going to give all the money back. I don't agree with how they operate. I'm going to take a stand and pledge loyalty to the PGA Tour." I feel like, like you said, it would all be over pretty quickly. But
no question. It's just a matter of, is it that simple for him?
Right. Exactly. Because he did say some things about the Saudis that you don't want to be in business with. There's no question about that. Bob, thank you so much, man. Check out the book, everybody. Check out the work on SI as well. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks so much.
Bob Herrig there, of course, the article on SI about the players and LIV Tour. Listen, I understand that when you start talking foreign policy on a college football show, that people's eyes glaze over. I get that. I'm a nerd who loves studying the world and what's going on out there. I am fascinated by the Phil Mickelson PGA Tour thing. Just absolutely fascinated by it. Because the Saudis, man, I'm not going to tell you what you should think about them. You should go do your own research and figure out how you think about them on your own. Because there's a lot out there. There's a lot there, and they are sports washing their reputation all across the globe. And they're trying to fight the PGA Tour with $500 billion. So go check it out, read up, and then you can form your own opinions on that one. We'll leave that one there. Paul Feinbaum Show here on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, 855-242-7285. Let's get back to divisions, back to your calls. We're going to take your calls right here on ESPN Radio because, again, divisions are going away. I think it is all for the best. You guys can convince me of the negatives. We'll do that next right here. Your phone calls, 855-242-7285, ESPN Radio, the ESPN app.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Paul Feinbaum Show here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. My name is Braden Gall, in for the guys, in for Paul, I should say. 855-242-7285. And it's time to take your phone calls because, listen, divisions are going away, folks, all right? Divisions are going away. The ACC, no vote today officially, but it does feel like the ACC is going to do away with divisions and go to a three-team 3x5 scheduling format. The SEC is on the verge of doing this, if I had to guess, and probably going to a 3-6 rotating format. I think it makes all the sense in the world to get rid of divisions. Better matchups in the championship game, better playoff team, better chance to get into the playoff, and a much better scheduling model so that you play more teams in your conference more often. And frankly, it's just simpler to track. That's my opinion. Also, the tradition side of this, for the SEC in particular, it's only been since 1992. It's not like it's a 75-year-old thing. It is a 30-year-old thing. So let's go to the phones. 855-242-7285. Try to convince me otherwise. Thank you guys for holding so much. John from Atlanta, welcome to the Paul Feinbaum Show. John, how are you, sir?
Hey, brother. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for holding.
Good, good. Long-time listener, first-time caller. You know, I live in Atlanta, but I'm originally from Louisiana, so I'm an LSU guy. And my hope is that Georgia could not start facing Alabama every year like we do in LSU. My hope is you can take Alabama off of our list and put it on UGA's list and let them take that whipping every week, every year, as they still think they're better than those in Alabama. But as to your other question, we can't stand Texas A&M. That's the kind of hate. I mean, sir, there's a healthy respect for Alabama because, yeah, you know, generally they're the biggest dogs on the block. But Texas A&M is like this nagging neighbor, this cousin you really don't like. And it's everything. It's soccer. It's football. It's, yep, track. It's baseball. It's all across the board. If there was such thing as badminton, we hate them for badminton. We just don't like them. But
So John, you're agreeing with me, and you're saying, as an LSU fan, you agree with me that you hate A&M more than you hate Alabama.
Oh, no. It's like the guy that's your neighbor and you really, really don't, yeah, like him, yeah, but you can't help but see him every day. That's how we feel about Texas. We really don't like him. But for the West, particularly for LSU, I'm trying to figure out what would be our three, because there are some really, really long-standing traditions that we have at LSU. Do we take Ole Miss? Do we take Mississippi State? I mean, there are some concerns, because there are a few people that we do want to face every year. So, but I'm open to a 3-6, 4-5 scenario where we get three or get four fixed and then float the other five. Yeah. But my sincere wish, my absolute sincere wish, is that Georgia, since they're closer, Alabama, they get to face Alabama every single year, and then they can debate after that game who's actually the best. Great show, guys. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, John. Here is what I wrote down on first glance, what I would put down for LSU. I think number one priority, if I'm the SEC office, I would match up LSU and Texas A&M number one. And I realize that is not the long-standing relationship that LSU has had with Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and even Arkansas to some degree. But there is much more history there. And as you just heard, I am right about this. LSU people, you hate A&M way more than you hate Alabama, and I don't think the rest of the league or the country knows that. Again, I had friends who were in Lexington when LSU got boat raced by Kentucky last season, and they were all back at the hotel in downtown Lexington after a whipping by the Kentucky Wildcats, watching the Alabama A&M game that ended up being an A&M upset, and LSU fans were rooting for Alabama. That's what I've been told by this. So here's what I wrote down. Texas A&M number one, Florida number two, Auburn number three. I think you can make a case for Ole Miss or Mississippi State. Arkansas, there's certainly plenty of history there. This is a tough one for me, because I think should this be the model the office goes to? And this is true for every conference. You don't want to sort of like load up one team. Like Auburn, in theory, let's say Auburn's top three teams that you would put on a permanent basis for Auburn football. It's Bama, Georgia, one and two. Wouldn't LSU be on that list? Like wouldn't Bama, Georgia, LSU be Auburn's top three most hated rivals? I just don't think you can. That feels a little disproportionate, or maybe extra difficult, when you look at maybe a South Carolina or a Vanderbilt or a Kentucky, where their three rivals would then have to be significantly easier. So do we want to weight these based on how good the quote-unquote programs are? I think that's difficult to do. So what I think is going to happen is you're going to get one like super difficult rival, one middle-of-the-pack rival, and one quote-unquote easier rival. And I think that's how they're going to try to balance it out. That's way more difficult to do. But if I'm LSU, I would go A&M, Florida, Auburn as the three that I would want to see every single year, and then you rotate the rest. And that does take Alabama off the rest off the menu there. 8 855 242 7285. Braden Gall in for Paul Feinbaum. Let's see here. John from Mobile. John, welcome to the Paul Feinbaum Show. How are you, sir?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I'm doing well,
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, sure.
Couple of things. I would prefer the 4-5. And I think the divisions, it's kind of an evolution. The divisions are far better than what we had before. I'm 61. So I remember, I think one year Georgia might have won the conference, and I think they lost three out-of-conference games, but they won the conference being 8-3. I might be wrong. But I remember as a kid, on the way back from the Alabama game, because everybody kicked off at 1 except for LSU, the opening game of the season, I remember coming back from Tuscaloosa having to be quiet in the car because my dad was listening to WWL out of New Orleans to LSU and Texas A&M. They used to open every year.
Yep.
And they do hate them. They do hate them.
No, there is no question about that. And
And the feeling is mutual from the A&M people. Let me tell you.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. I totally agree. John, thank you for the call, man, and I appreciate you holding. I think you make an interesting point about the 4 and the 5. And I need to think through the math on that to make sure that works. If you had 4 permanent rivals and then 5 teams that rotate, you would still play. That's 10 every 2 years. Like, I think that would work. So that's an option. 3 and 6, 4 and 5, that's an option. The key is to try to play as many as possible as often as possible. And right now the ACC's 3 and 5 model with an 8 conference game schedule is pretty sound, actually, logically. And I just think you look at the Big 12 over the last few years and you see the best 2 teams in the Big 12 playing in the conference championship game. And that, even though it's like this past season, for example, it did not benefit the Big 12 because Baylor, you know, couldn't touch the pylon at the end in Oklahoma State or whatever. Oklahoma State couldn't get to the pylon and Baylor wins the conference championship and they, because of 2 losses, don't get into the playoff, whereas Oklahoma State might have had a chance to get in. I think you look at how that model has worked where they play everyone the last few seasons. I just think that's a better way to determine a champion. Oh, by the way, it also gives you the best possible championship game. Oh, by the way, it also gives you far better scheduling model in the regular season. And oh, by the way, it gives you the best possible team in the playoff, or maybe the best 2 teams in the playoff. You're putting your best foot forward if you're a conference. Again, go look at the ACC and Big Ten title game. There's a lot of teams not even ranked in the top 15 playing in those championship games. I think Pittsburgh and Wake Forest this past year, weren't they like 15 and 18 in the nation? Now, again, that's sort of a rare year, but, you know, what happens if Clemson and NC State, and by all accounts from the ACC, the Coastal Division, they all want to keep it as it is because they've got an easier path to the title game, whereas the Atlantic Division, which is the Clemson, NC State, Florida State, Louisville Division, they all want it. They don't want divisions because it's a tougher path to the championship game. Same thing in the Big Ten. The Big Ten East, they don't want any divisions because Michigan, Penn State, Michigan State, Ohio State are all in the same division. And they want a chance to rematch potentially in the conference title game. Whereas the Big Ten West, Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska, Purdue, Northwestern, they don't want to change it because they have a clear path to the title game. So everyone's acting in their own best interest here. It's very, very interesting. More of your phone calls, 855-242-7285, 855-242-7285. Also, Mike Leach tweets about expansion, and I think everyone has sort of missed the boat on this. I think the entire Twitter sphere has missed the boat on this. I'll explain. Braden Gall in for Paul Feinbaum. We'll do that next. More of your calls as well. This is the Feinbaum Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wednesday edition, Paul Feinbaum Show, ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. Braden Gall in for Paul, at Braden Gall on the Twitters. If you disagree with me, which I'm sure you do, and all my takes, feel free to let me know how dumb you think I am on the Twitter sphere. That's what it's for, right? That's what Twitter's for. Because I got some thoughts about Mike Leach tweeting about playoff expansion and comparing it to the Kentucky Derby that I think he just was a little off on. And he also stumbled into something that I think we need to be very concerned about. I'll explain all of that coming up in just a minute. 855-242-7285, 855-242-7285. I think divisions are the biggest story outside of the NCAA cracking down or trying to crack down, which really is just inviting lawsuits on name, image, and likeness and collectives being boosters, which, again, I don't think is going to work. God, if only the NCAA had been in a position of power over the last 25 years to do something about name, image, and likeness. Oh, God, their behavior sometimes is mind-numbingly stupid, and I don't understand it. 855-242-7285. Divisions, I think, are gone moving forward very soon in college football. The ACC could move to this model as soon as next year. The Mountain West is going. I think the Big Ten is going to follow suit, and I think the SEC is going to go there as well. So I think it's the right thing to do. I've laid out all the reasons. You guys are trying to convince me otherwise. Dylan from Texas, you're first up on the show. Let's go to the lines. Dylan, welcome to the Paul Feinbaum Show. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, man.
All right, so I don't necessarily disagree with you on the divisions being swiped completely away. But one of my biggest questions, and I guess we'll stick with the SEC since this seems to be the hottest topic right now with as far as the divisions go, is let's say it was up for grabs right now and, you know, Texas and OU are coming over to the SEC and we still have divisions. What does that do with the divisional picture? I mean, obviously the West is already stacked geographically. Texas and OU are going to be in the West if they keep the divisions. So who goes to the East? And I would assume it'd be one of the two Alabama teams in Auburn or Alabama, maybe one of the two Mississippi teams as well, in which case you strengthen your Eastern division a little bit more with those two teams, which would make the divisional games or the interdivisional games that much more compelling at that point. Just kind of what your take on that first off.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Now, I think the understanding is that Auburn and Alabama would go to the East, Texas, Oklahoma would go to the West, and then you would move Missouri over to the West as well to make it truly geographically balanced. But again, if that was the case, that would mean that Georgia and Alabama cannot play for the SEC championship. Even if they are clearly the best two teams in the conference, which they are right now, that would mean they can't play. And I don't know why we would want to take that away from ourselves, if that makes sense. Does that make sense, Dylan?
Well, yeah, that makes sense to me. It's just, I guess, and on your side of things, where I'm with you on getting rid of, you know, I want to see college football go forward. You know, they're going to make money. They have people in place that are going to continually find ways to make money for college football. So I'm with you in the fact I don't want to see two teams from the same division in a four-team playoff. From the same conference in a four-team playoff. I want to see the best teams in the playoffs. I want a reason to watch all the playoff games without saying, oh, this is going to be a blowout, you know. So, I mean, I'm 100% for it. That's where we're going toward, whether it be we extend the playoffs to 8 to 12 teams or whatever we do. I want to see the best football possible. But as far as divisions go, for the team people that do want to keep divisions, I also want to see the strongest divisional games possible. I love the fact that the 3 and 5, you know, be able to rotate your teams and have a chance to play all these teams more often. And, you know, but it just for the ones that want to keep the divisions going, if I don't really like the fact that both teams from Alabama are going over, especially if you're going to do that 3 and 5, you can still play Auburn and Bama every year and have that rivalry going and still rotate your 5 teams. But I mean, either way it goes, they're going to make money. So if we're going to get better football out of what you're saying, eliminating the divisions, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and that, Dylan, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. That's really honestly, like, as a diehard college football junkie, that's where my heart lies. It's like, how do we get the best football? Because when you have, like, money interest, cynical capitalistic money interest aligned with football interest, you're going to get action. You're going to get movement and progress. And now let's play out the divisional thing for just a second. If you move Auburn and Alabama to the East, Texas and Oklahoma and Missouri are now in the West. Like, if that's the case and you want to stay at divisions, how can you play anyone from the other division? Like, you're going to get to play two teams, and then you're playing every, instead of every 12 years, you're playing every 14 years? Like, that doesn't, I mean, again, road and home there, you're playing twice every 14 years, but only once in another team's stadium? Like, how can you have a conference where Alabama plays LSU in Baton Rouge one time every 14 years? Because, again, if you move Bama and Auburn to the east, and you put Texas and Oklahoma and Missouri in the west, and now you have a geographically aligned two-division SEC, that's seven games in the division, and even if you push it up to nine conference games, that's only two crossovers. Which means, again, Georgia and LSU would play in Baton Rouge or in Athens once every 14 years. That is, I will tell you right now, that is not what the SEC wants. I don't think it's what fans want. I don't want that. I am, basically, the trade-off is I'm willing to give up the third and fourth tier games that happen every year. Let's call it LSU and Mississippi State. Pretty good game, especially when Dak Prescott was around. Pretty good game, but it's not LSU's top rival. It's not Mississippi State's top rival. Maybe you know, Mississippi State fans might argue that. But maybe you lose that one for 2 years, and then it's back on for 2 years. But in exchange, you get to play everybody from the East all the time. And so I think that's the key, is to rotate teams through college campuses more often, and every 4 years to play every team in a 16-team league at least twice every 4 years. That's pretty awesome, guys. That is truly an awesome setup, in my opinion. And, oh, by the way, it's going to give you 1-2 in the championship game. And this doesn't apply just to the SEC. This is across the board. This is across the board. Tommy from New Orleans, one of my favorite places in all of the world. Tommy, what's up?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing well.
First of all, I'm a huge Alabama fan. When I was a little boy, my daddy sent me and my brother down and told us we'd love Alabama. We'd find someplace else to live. We looked at each other and said, roll tide. So my whole life I've been down here. And if you think Texas, LSU fans hate Texas A&M more than Alabama, you've lost your mind. I know people down here would give up their firstborn son for them to beat Alabama. It's not even close. I mean, of course, the rivalry's been the hammer and the nail. If they want to take Alabama off the schedule, it's because they're afraid. Everybody, LSU's big claim to fame is you don't want to come to Death Valley on a Saturday night. LSU, in the history of the rivalry, if you can call it that, has only beat Alabama nine times at Death Valley. Before Saban went to LSU, they went over 30 years without beating Alabama in Death Valley. And it's just, if they're afraid, but Texas A&M's not even the same stratosphere as a rivalry. LSU truly never had a rivalry, a real good rivalry, since Ole Miss, you know, in the last 50 years has not really been nothing. That's why they tried to come up with the Boot Trophy to make Arkansas and LSU a rival. I mean, I know Texas A&M and LSU's had some good games, but it's not even in the same stratosphere. And as far as, like, not keeping the rivalry games, look what happened to the Big 12. Look how powerful they was that Nebraska moved. You lose Oklahoma, Nebraska. You lose Texas A&M, Texas. I don't want to lose the rivalries that made the SEC a powerhouse and such a well-oiled machine. You know, iron sharpens iron. I want to play the best teams. I want to play them, but I don't want to lose Auburn, LSU, and Texas A&M. I mean, not Texas A&M, and Tennessee. I mean, historically, you know, Tennessee ain't been good for the last 15 years, but prior to that, Tennessee was Alabama's big rival because we stopped playing Auburn for so many years. The only coach Matt Bryan ever really said he was afraid of was General Nealon. And so, you know, we own LSU. I mean, you know, I'm sure they'd like to get us off the schedule, but the hatred for them is not, for Texas A&M, it's not. I can't tell you. If you told LSU fans, if you went to Death Valley, anything, that they're going to lose to Texas A&M, Alabama, Ole Miss, all they can only beat one of them. I'll bet my Oscar Mayer against a dozen donuts that the majority, 90%, say beat Alabama.
All right. Thank you.
I lived down here my whole life.
Thank you, Tommy. You know? I appreciate the call, man. Thank you. Thank you for the call. Here, a couple questions. First of all, it's not fair to compare the Nebraska-Oklahoma rivalry to what we're talking about here, because we're not talking about teams leaving the SEC. We're just talking about not scheduling them every single year. So the rivalries don't go anywhere. It's just not as frequent for, like, your third and fourth tier rivals. your top three-tier rivals, you'll still play them every year. Alabama-Auburn isn't going anywhere. The Iron Bowl is not going anywhere. The Egg Bowl is not going anywhere. The cocktail party is not going anywhere. Like, none of that stuff's going anywhere. It's just those third- and fourth-tier rivals that are only going to be played two out of 4 years instead of four out of 4 years. So this is not the same thing as Missouri and Kansas being in different conferences, or Pittsburgh and West Virginia in the backyard brawl being in different conferences, or Nebraska going to the Big Ten. Those are teams that are leaving to go to another conference. You can't compare that to just a scheduling tweak. So that's not a concern for me. This is how scientific this research has been today on the show. Braden Gall in for Paul Feinbaum on ESPN Radio. I have one call so far from an LSU fan. So far, every single LSU fan that has called into this show today agrees with me that they hate A&M more. Tommy, you're a Bama fan. I know you're from New Orleans, but you're not an LSU fan, so you don't count. LSU fans so far, and this is totally science, guys. You cannot argue with these results. This is a scientific method. So far, 100% of LSU fans agree with me on the show. It's science, y'all. Can't argue with it, man. You can't argue with it. 855-242-7285. 855-242-7285. Why Mike Leach is out in left field with this tweet. We'll do that when we come back right here on the Paul Feinbaum Show. Braden Gall in for Paul on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Braden Gall here on the Paul Feinbaum Show in for Paul. ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, 855-242-7285. And Mike Leach sent out a tweet essentially comparing, basically using the Kentucky Derby. If you didn't see it, I believe Rich Strike, right? Is that the horse that won the Kentucky Derby? 80-1 odds, which if you'd like to compare that to college football championships, I believe Auburn and Texas are about 80-1 to win the national title. So if you want to comparison to a college football, there's probably, what is Auburn, 7th in the West preseason in 2022? They're probably 40th in the country in terms of projecting national champions. So, like, again, if you want to compare the odds, that's basically what 80-1 looks like in terms of college football national championship. And he tweeted, Mike Leach tweeted out, I believe Saturday, Sunday, Monday, something like that, that, quote, "That horse winning the Kentucky Derby today is a good example of why an expanded college football playoff is needed. That horse hadn't won all of the races leading up, but it got a chance, and that's what happened." I think he was trying to make a case, obviously, for these long shot horse winning this random singular event, despite being awful in the quote unquote regular season, winning a title in the quote unquote championship situation, to the reason why we need to expand, when all he did, in my opinion, all he did with that tweet was tell us why we need to keep the playoff where it is. Because if you can be an awful, quote-unquote, awful team, like, what is the horse Rich Strike's equivalent in college football? Is it a 6-6 team? Is it a 4-8 team? Like, what's the equivalent in college football? So, number one, that team would never even sniff the playoff, nor should it. And really what you're telling us, and let's be honest with ourselves here, how many of us, I'll put my hand up, have watched a single horse race in 2022? If you're not a gambler, and you're not on the, if you're not in, you know, Louisville or Lexington, and you're betting on the ponies, or California, or wherever people go gamble on horse racing, I mean, let's be honest, not a single one of us has watched a single horse race before the Kentucky Derby on Saturday. So really, what he's saying is, let's devalue the regular season. That's what Mike Leach said with that tweet. So I don't think the logic is there. It doesn't make any sense to me. What I think that example is an example of how we need to keep the playoff at four so that we have more value in the regular season. Now, I am okay with expansion. I've come around on this. It's taken me about 10 years because I wanted it to be really exclusive to get to the championship and play for a national title. I've come around on the value of the sport and the value to the sport being more inclusive. The sport is not as healthy as it could be if you do not have any teams west of the Mississippi interested, or west of Texas, I should say, interested in the college football playoff. If entire swaths of the country are uninterested, that's not healthy. It's not good for the sport. What Mike Leach might have stumbled on is, well, if the Power Five breaks away and they have their own basketball tournament, that even a 1-17 Georgia gets in and compete for a playoff, that's what he actually talked about, was an NCAA basketball tournament scenario, to be honest with you. 855-242-7285. I don't know what he's talking about, honestly. 855-242-7285. Braden Gall in for Paul Feinbaum. More of your calls, that's next on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.